Welcome to The Value of Knowing, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of legal complexity and opportunity on the vibrant continent of Africa. Stay tuned for expert insights and a closer look at the legal landscape in Africa, where Bowmans helps its clients to manage legal complexity and unlock opportunity. That's The Value of Knowing.
Hello everyone, my name is Nicole Martins. I head up the Impact Advisory Practice at Cruthum, which is a research house and consultancy based in South Africa. And our whole mission is to make the financial services sector work better for society. As part of that, I spend my days working with companies, philanthropic organizations, and investors on navigating the world of sustainability and impact. And a common thread across all the conversations that we have is this idea of accountability. We're currently in a climate where there is growing expectation from policymakers and regulators, from communities, from consumers, and from investors for organizations to set and stick to robust strategies for sustainability and impact. And of course, that raises a couple of questions around what happens when we don't. So where is that accountability and where does ESG litigation fit in? So I'm very excited to have some legal experts in the room today to discuss some of the frequently asked questions that I get from my clients on the continent, and also to discuss some of the infrequently asked questions that we think should be more frequently asked, the kind of things that will keep you prepared rather than blindsided. I'd like to go around and just have each of my speakers introduce themselves. Let's start with you, David, and then Christina and Brian.
Thank you, Nicole. I'm David Jarrell. I'm a partner in the Johannesburg office of Bowmans, and I'm in the financial services regulatory team here at Bowmans, where we focus on, among other things, ESG regulation within the financial context, and obviously the risks and the mitigation of litigation within that context.
Thanks, David. Christina?
I'm Christina Nduba. I am a corporate advisory and M&A partner in the Nairobi office of Bowmans, and excited to bring in the Kenyan perspective on this discussion.
Thank you. Brian?
I'm Brian Mombosho. I'm a senior associate in the litigation and dispute resolution practice at Bowmans. I'm focusing on commercial litigation, arbitration, and cross-border disputes, with particular experiences possibly on maritime infrastructure and financial services sector.
Great. Thank you so much. So we've got a good representation then, I think, across the different kinds of practice areas and a regional representation across the continent. Really looking forward to picking your brains. So maybe it's a good place to start is with you, David, just to give us a quick overview of what actually counts as ESG-related litigation. What are we talking about?
Litigation, which is obviously proceedings in a court. So any litigation where the underlying complaint, the cause that has given rise to the litigation, is either about an environmental issue or a social issue. For example, the displacement of communities or the adequacy of housing, etc., or an issue that arises from the alleged improper governance of an organization. So that's your classic ESG. And governance is the one that probably to the average person is the more remote one to try and get your head around. And there we're talking about issues that investors look at when they look at a company, like its board composition. Is there, you know, are the chief executive and the chair the same person? Are there allegations of bribery and corruption? Do they have proper systems in place? How does their executive compensation look? What is the record of voting on that? Does the company have opaque holding structures? These are the kinds of things that would be governance red flags from an investor perspective. Obviously, environmental red flags and social red flags are slightly easier to identify. But that would essentially be what ESG litigation would be. It would be a litigation that could be precipitated by any of those kinds of risk factors.
Oh, great. And is it something that we're seeing more of recently?
I think what we're seeing is increased awareness of the potential impact of not obviously financial reporting. You know, it's easy to invest and decide on risk by looking at somebody's balance sheet and income statements and those kinds of things. But I think for quite a long time, there's been a sense that environmental, social, and governance issues ultimately do have an impact on the investability and arguably on the return of investments. So I think still in many jurisdictions in Africa, it's probably premature to say that we're seeing an increase in ESG litigation per se. But there certainly are numerous examples in several jurisdictions of litigation around social issues, like an obvious one is displacement of communities by dam building contractors, as one example. Certainly environmental litigation. And we have also seen some governance-related litigation, not on the continent, but I mean, Steinhoff is a very good example of securities litigation arising ultimately from South Africa. So we are seeing such litigation. And the question, which I think we'll unpack a bit, will be whether there's more propensity for more of this kind of litigation, if companies are adequately prepared for it, because there are already precedents for this kind of litigation.
So it sounds like it's quite a broad ambit. And I think probably one of the kinds of fields where you need to have a broadened risk aperture when you're thinking about ESG-related litigation. So we're sort of in a space now where it's moved beyond, just your emission scandals that you would have seen a couple of years ago. Brian, maybe to turn to you, since this is sort of your bread and butter, and ask you a little bit more at the enterprise level, what kinds of behaviors put you at risk of ESG-related litigation, and what kind of examples have you seen in your market?
Basically, looking into that, the sort of behaviors that basically will put you at risk in negligences or any non-compliance issues in terms of how the company could be able to be managed. I could give you an example, for instance, in a very vivid example for the Barry case. This case was just decided last year in the Court of Appeal of Tanzania, whereby this case arose from a dispute whereby a family of four claimed that they had suffered illness and distress because the company carried out blasting and mining operations very close to their home. So the family, they say that they could not be able to move because the company had not paid them fair compensation for their land. In this aspect, the High Court originally found the company liable for negligence, holding that, dust and fumes and explosive had caused the family's health problems, and awarded each family member almost about 50 million shillings. But of course, on an appeal level, also the Court of Appeal agreed that there was specifically a duty of care, but it clarified that, of course, the family had not really provided a specific medical link, leave that aside. But still, they held the company that to have caused a nuisance, and it specifically required the company to put compensation. So, okay. What relevance is this in this particular situation? What we come to find out is where companies or corporates or investors come in, for instance, in this peculiar case in Tanzania, let's say for gaining mineral rights, and they would obtain mineral rights in Tanzania, but at the same time, those particular mineral rights are not extended to the surface rights. So eventually what happens is an investor would find himself having a mineral right, but in order to get the surface right over that particular area, he would still need to renegotiate with the occupiers of that particular land. So eventually, if there is any sort of a deadlock between those particular negotiations, you would still find that you do have the mineral right and you could still continue to proceed with the mining processes. But at the same time, with those particular mining processes, they could eventually affect the persons on the surface, and considerable liabilities could come along. And at the same time, the issues on negotiations between those particular parties are also a very wide spectrum. So in essence, what we could be able to say is that the initial risk would be on the very long litigation. Issues on capital, they have to be reconsidered. They have to understand and put all the prospects in terms of how they might be able to negotiate with the people in the land. So far as to say that, in general, as David had mentioned previously, of course, the whole process of ESG, it's kind of like, it's not really picking up. It's somewhere there, but of course, there are very aspects of it, the environmental protection, social rights and everything else, they've all been protected. We do have the legal framework. We have the Environmental Management Act in Tanzania, which establishes a justifiable right to a clean and healthy environment. And this definitely provides a direct basis for environmental litigation. We do have the Civil Procedure Act, which provides for representative suits, which class actions could actually be brought against the investors. So we do have those, the legal frameworks in place. And as you say, the propensity could definitely go higher, you know, in the years to come.
Thanks, Brian. So I think, you know, as someone who's not a legal professional, it's always helpful for me to play things back and put them into layman's terms. But what I'm hearing from you is that, you know, the precedent exists to hold companies to account for the violation of sort of basic tenets. So for doing the wrong thing and not meeting the requirements when it comes to environmental or social regulations. But what I'm also hearing is that it's quite tricky to attribute damages to particular entities. And so one of the questions I have, and it's the kind of question that comes up from investors and companies all the time, is this idea of how severe is the penalty? So you mentioned some financial penalties. They don't seem like they're not going to break the bank necessarily. So a lot of the penalty that you suffer at this stage is around reputational risk and your social license to operate. Is that something that you would agree with in terms of your context? I mean, you mentioned that it's not a sort of a mainstay in terms of litigation at the moment. Is it more of a reputational thing than a financial or criminal penalty at this stage?
Yes, as you have specifically mentioned, but at the current moment, the cases that I mentioned, I think it only involved about a certain family members, but you can understand, like, if an investor comes in and takes about, you know, thousands of square meters land, and if each individual would have been given that specific damage, it would have been considerable, huge amount. That would be a very huge amount, especially in respect of investors who are coming for the mining projects. But nevertheless, as you've also mentioned, it's also a question of reputational basis, because as far as the investor themselves are concerned, but it would be something else that they'd be able to check, especially on the global perspective, on their negligence or their misconduct here in Tanzania. How exactly could it be depicted elsewhere in other parts of the country and not necessarily in Tanzania itself? So yes, that's absolutely the case, Nicole.
Christina, I've got two questions for you now. So you obviously deal a lot with investors that are looking for opportunities across the continent. And, you know, the risk that investors face, to my mind, is double, in the sense that should there be a violation of ESG-related regulation within your portfolio, so a specific company within your portfolio, and there is some sort of fine, like Brian's talking about, or a loss of social license to operate. Obviously, as a shareholder or a bondholder, you feel that financially. But I suppose your risk as an investor is also around your own reputation, right, as being sort of engaged with illicit behavior. Is that something that you're seeing increasingly a concern for investors?
Definitely. So I think first, I just want to start off by saying that in Kenya, in the Kenyan context, you will not find, if you walked into a courtroom today and asked for an ESG litigation file, you'll probably receive blank stares, because people don't call it ESG litigation. But ESG, or I'd say ESG adjacent litigation, is happening all the time. And Kenyans are becoming more and more litigious. So it's interesting that you'll find here the big cases that are happening in our environmental and land court in relation to community land issues, public participation issues. There was a case, for example, of some investors who are looking to put up a plant in our coast that was completely shut down because of they did not follow the correct procedure in relation to public participation. And so there was public interest litigation that went in. And so you can imagine that ends up being, I know we in the Tanzanian context, we said right now the main thing is reputational. But in our case, that was a very good example where the whole project was shut down. So that was both financial as well as reputational, because now you go and you collected this money to invest in this project and the project just can't go on because you failed to meet the public participation process. And so investors in Kenya need to be or people coming to look to invest in Kenya need to be really wary. They're not just looking at tick box exercises, that they're actually walking the talk. If they indicate that there is a group-wide policy, our courts are now starting to say you can't have control and claim you have control and have these group-wide policies, but then you're not actually enforcing them in the Kenyan context. And so investors really should be thinking, what is my reputational risk, both from a Kenya level, and then obviously now with when you look at the funds who have gone and collected money from DFIs and other institutional investors, what commitments have I made to them? And am I going to be violating those commitments because of what I've done in relation to my investee company in Kenya? And so it is broader. Our courts are looking at it broader. There has been a lot of precedent in our market when it comes to constitutional and participation rights, and people do go to court to enforce these rights. If you're going to claim something from that's misleading, there's been consumer protection litigation as well. So definitely a risk area for investors to be thinking about.
That's interesting. And I think, one of the things that comes up in conversation a lot, so we've talked a bit about doing what you shouldn't, right? So violating a specific regulatory requirement. But one of the things that's coming up increasingly, and I think it's driven by trends that we see in other markets, is the concerns around greenwashing. So what about when I say I'm going to do something or that I am doing something, but I'm found to be misleading my stakeholders? David, how is greenwashing currently handled in terms of the ESG-related litigation or regulatory framework in South Africa?
Nicole, I just wanted to add something on the previous comment, which from the investor perspective, what's quite interesting is if we just look within the context of environmental litigation in South Africa, certainly in say the past 5 years or so, there have been a number of cases. There were a power company's attempts to set up LNG plants offshore were scuppered effectively by environmental litigation, but it was litigation against the state granting the license for that to happen. It was the same with a power company's attempts to do seismic surveys off the Wild Coast, which people were concerned would have damaging effects on the ecology of that area. A couple of effectively interdicts of grants of coal mining licenses. All of these litigation matters, interestingly, weren't against the investors. They were against the state as the primary respondent. In other words, that people were saying that the state can't be granting these licenses in these circumstances. Now that, although the investors didn't suffer necessarily a very obvious or direct reputational or financial damage there, the point is that their investments couldn't proceed as and when they were proposed to proceed. And that was because people were suing the state. It shows that there certainly is opportunity for, in either the E, the S, or the G context, for investments to be halted or suspended or to suffer, and certainly not pan out on the predicted terms when parties start to litigate against the state that needs to license those businesses. So I think that was something I just wanted to point out in the South African context of when you talk about ESG litigation, as Christine said, you won't get an answer if you ask anyone what matters have come across your desk as ESG litigation. But in this context, it certainly does pop up. And also if you ask the question, what actions have been brought that have been contrary to investors' interest, the answer might not be that obvious. But I think the answer is obvious if you're trying to plan predictability into your investment planning. And also what often happens in these kinds of matters is, again, as the other two have mentioned, is you'll have public interest like amici, friends of the court coming into the game. And these people are often portrayed as the good guys within sort of media reporting. And if you have a good guy, you need a bad guy. And I think that's where investors are also exposed on the reputational side. It might not be direct action against them, but they certainly end up, as people say, potentially on the wrong side of history. And these are risks. These are brand and reputational and investment risks that need to be very properly considered by investors. I'll move on to your greenwashing question next. I think the regulatory framework for greenwashing is not as advanced, certainly in South Africa, as in other environments. But as we've seen in the UK, for example, greenwashing matters arise in the context of incorrect advertising and or unlawful competition where statements are made that aren't appropriate about the products. We're still relatively early days here. We've only, I think, had one matter on greenwashing per se, which has come through the Advertising Standards Board. But what both South Africa and Kenya have developed in the last few years is a green finance taxonomy, which I think stands to change the game quite significantly, because now what you have is, in South Africa, it's technically not national legislation. I think I'll ask Christine to comment on that. I think in Kenya it is, but you certainly have a government endorsed national standard by which to measure claims that something is or is not contributing positively to mitigating adverse environmental effects by virtue of these operations or investments, or is in fact contributing in some way to offset those effects. Now, when standards like this take hold, as they have done in the EU and in China as well, and in some other jurisdictions, then you start getting a very definite base against which to measure claims of greenwashing. And I think in that context, the opportunity for greenwashing litigation is gonna sort of grow exponentially in the next 2 to 5 years, I would imagine, certainly in South Africa.
Thanks, David. And I think it is interesting to think about where the market is going. And I'd love to end on that in a little while. But before we do, maybe to ask you, Christina, so you mentioned that, you know, in Kenya, the market is becoming more litigious. So David has talked about some of the precedent-setting cases that have been in local and overseas markets. To your mind, Christina, are we learning from other markets, or is this homegrown initiative?
I think it's definitely a mixture of both. We have a lot of public interest litigation that had been happening in Kenya for a while now. And this has been spurred on by our constitution that gives people certain rights. And so it gives a lot of people standing to be able to go challenge things in court. Our own government has been put to call when it's trying to pass certain laws and they haven't followed the correct procedure. And so this is something that we're seeing more and more happening in Kenya. However, I do think there is a part to play with what's happening globally. And we do have NGOs and other people who have international organizations that have bases in Kenya that are also pushing some of these things along, pushing this agenda along. So we are learning from their class action suits don't happen in the same way that they happen, for example, in the States. But you do have people going into court on behalf of the public in certain issues. We have communities banding together. So we've seen this a lot when it comes to land dispute cases or things touching on environmental issues that will impact a community. So the communities have been able to organize. We have community-based organizations that are then able to organize themselves and put on litigation. So I think we're seeing it on both angles. Completely homegrown because people have learned that the place to enforce their rights are the courts. But then also there's an international angle to it because we have international organizations coming and furthering this particular line of type of litigation in Kenya. And actually, just to add to the point that David had said about the green finance taxonomy in Kenya, so that's something that actually is being pushed by our central bank. It's fairly new. We are going to see what this looks like. What they've done is define and given us parameters for what will actually be credibly called green in relation to financing. And so that will obviously bring about some kind of transparency. And hopefully if everyone complies with it, it will reduce litigation risk. But then that also means the risk is if you're claiming to be green and you're not compliant with our taxonomy and the framework that has been set up, then you put yourself in additional litigation risk.
Thanks, Christina. And greenwashing is something that we've seen, as David has mentioned, as you've mentioned, in other markets, I think more prominently, but we are starting to see it in African markets, as we mentioned. Brian, what else are we seeing in other markets that show lessons for us in Africa when it comes to ESG-related risk and the litigation processes?
I think it's what is important is that there has got to be some sort of a robust due diligence before investing. That is one thing that investors should be able to look into it, ensuring that the compliances with environmental and land laws, you know, you sometimes may be able to require portfolio companies to adopt certain grievance mechanism, you know, in the best way how you can be able to see interaction with the communities. I think also the investors can be able to try to give track regulatory development. So, you know, for example, the Tanzania Environmental Management Act empowers the organization called NEMC to intervene aggressively in cases of environmental harm. So in these particular situations, investors should be able to be very careful in order to, for them to see what the best way that these particular environmental authorities are doing, and they can be able to track those particular developments, and so they can be able to implement systems and policies in their investments. Other thing I think it would be also to, they should be able to consider in question of avoiding disputes escalating into litigation, because litigation in Tanzania, it takes too long, incredibly expensive, and at the same time, the issue on reputation can actually differ on the basis that this particular information can reach out to the news, and the news can be able to escalate it in other different dimensions. All in all, I think would be the best defenses for the investors would be to be proactive and have compliance and genuine engagement in prevention of these sort of matters that can be able to come up with. Also, all in all, to mention, irrespective of, as Christina and David had mentioned, that they may not be necessarily an ESG litigation as a concept to be mentioned here, but the eventuality is these disputes or these issues are actually being seen very vivid, especially in Tanzania, considering that the laws are there being placed and they are basically supporting. The mention that the issue that you mentioned about the greenwashing, for instance, we do not have a specific anti-greenwashing laws, but you know, there's a combination of all the consumer protection, environmental regulations, and the, you know, the corporate disclosure rules that would basically lead to somehow be interpreted widely to lead to greenwashing issues. I would say, for instance, in anti-competition laws, there's a specific provisions which directs the misleading representations about certain business activities. So in the legal words of this particular provision, it's very wide to include issues on environment or misinformation regarding how exactly a certain investor has procured its environmental prospects or regulations.
Okay, well, so what I'm hearing is that we might not always call it strictly ESG litigation, but there are frameworks in place that encompass these factors. When we think about, you know, sustainable, resilient, stable markets and the behaviors that companies, investors might engage in that disrupt those, there are accountability mechanisms in place to try and capture that. And what I'm also hearing is that we're increasingly seeing the interpretation of existing regulations expand to incorporate what I guess we would have previously considered to be, at least from the perspective of investors, sort of non-financial factors, and they're increasingly having a financial impact. They're increasingly financially material to companies. What I'd be very keen to understand from all of you actually is, where do you think we're going? So we talked a little bit about the green finance taxonomies. I mean, that's quite a progressive step that South Africa and Kenya have taken, modeled largely on the movement in the EU and the UK, even though the UK has decided now not to include it in their sustainable finance framework. But where do you think we're going? So are we going to see more, even more litigation? And do you think we're heading towards class actions? In your respective markets, how do you think ESG-related litigation, whatever we call it, evolves over the next few years? Maybe we start with you, David, and then I'm keen to hear from Christina and Brian also about your markets. But David, over to you.
What we are going to be seeing is regulators clamping down on the question of not directly greenwashing, but sustainability labeling, because they're aware that there's market sentiment, that this is something to look out for and either invest in or buy products from those underlying investors. So that's the regulators coming in before the courts actually being enjoined as such. So I think we're going to see that. But I do also think that as we get more and more pieces of the puzzle starting to land, we are, I think, going to see far more shareholder activism, i.e. far more pressure on investors and on companies operating in various sectors to be far more transparent to their shareholders. I do think class action or group litigation of some sort, in other words, people coming together, whether it's under a technical class action standard or otherwise, I think we're going to see an increase of that. And the one thing there that's quite interesting from the South African perspective is our constitution has a Bill of Rights, which has a whole bunch of socioeconomic fundamental rights enshrined in the constitution. And those rights, in some constitutions, they're actionable against the state. But the South African constitution explicitly provides for horizontal application. In other words, a private party can sue another private party for breach of a fundamental right. And I think once that starts to land more in the general conversation, I think we're likely to see significantly more constitutional litigation, whether class action or not, against parties who are perceived to infringe socioeconomic rights that vulnerable persons are unable to defend or prosecute themselves.
Thanks, David. Okay, so South Africa, we're bracing for more class actions, for hopefully some increased disclosure and fund or product labeling regimes. I think that could add significant value actually to the market in terms of, as Brian was saying, just pure consumer protection as well. That would be great to see. Christina, in Kenya, what do you think the future looks like in terms of what I know you've said is not traditionally called ESG-related litigation, but for the field?
Yes, I think the future is really here in the sense that we are already seeing an increase in, let me call it ESG adjacent litigation and disputes in the court. But what's going to be happening is that they're just going to get more structured, not less, with decisions coming out. There's been even a recent decision recently where a community took a conservancy to court. And with decisions like that coming out and people seeing, oh, there's actually a success rate, or they took this claim and it worked out for them, let's take our claim as well. You will see more of it coming through and it being more structured. So I do expect more constitutional and administrative challenges, because just as David said, also in Kenya, you do get people taking claims in from a constitutional angle, because, for example, they have the right to a clean environment and it's enshrined in our constitution. So they use that in their constitutional petition when taking a private entity to court. I do think we're going to see more constitutional and administrative challenges, especially around climate risk, land and public participation issues. At the same time, we have noted our regulators are sharpening their teeth in Kenya. And so you'll see our competition authority, that is the one holding the docket in relation to consumer protection issues, actually putting in enforcement actions now. The same thing we've seen with our Office of the Data Protection Commissioner, and already issuing fines when it comes to data protection of Kenyans. And just add the green finance taxonomy into the equation, and the message is clear. The bar in Kenya is rising, and so enforcement will follow where entities fall short of their expectations and their requirements, or when they're making claims that end up being misleading or false. And there's a small nuance I just wanted to add on, that sometimes we forget, as an M&A lawyer, many of our cross-border investments and transactions are structured with foreign arbitration clauses. So arbitration in London, in Paris, LCI arbitration somewhere else, and not necessarily with a city, Nairobi. And so that might protect an investor's contractual rights in relation to their dealings with sponsors in Kenya or the people investing into them abroad. But then it doesn't actually shield the target company and their investment in Kenya on protect them from local litigation. So communities, regulators, or employees will not go to London. They will go to the Environmental and Land Court in Kenya. They'll go to our Environmental Tribunal here. They'll go to our Employment and Labor Relations Court in Kenya and Nairobi. So you'll end up with parallel exposures, arbitration abroad and still having your local litigation at home because of the things that you're not doing or doing or claiming or not claiming in Kenya.
Thanks, Christina. Okay, so we're so far with South Africa and with Kenya, we're agreed that things are only going to get more intense. We're only going to see more of this. Brian, in Tanzania, what are some of the theme areas that you think we're going to be concentrating on? We've mentioned things like health issues that are stemming from operations. What are some of the other themes that you think are going to be quite prominent when it comes to ESG-related litigation in Tanzania?
I would agree with David and Christina. In the coming future, basically Tanzania is going to place itself fully fledged with respect to all ESG litigation issues. Why do I say that? This is because in Tanzania right now, there is a Tanzanian Development Vision 2050, which prioritizes environmental integrity and climate change resilience as a national objectives. So if you have this particular thing and, you know, the priorities are very clear, definitely we are going to see much oversight bodies such as the National Environment Mitigation Commission, the NEMC, and the Queen Support Enforcement. And basically the trajectory as the ESG litigation will definitely be expected to rise in this alignment.
Thanks, Brian. We've covered quite a lot. So my key takeaways from this discussion, what we understand is that ESG litigation exists. It's not always called ESG litigation, but it covers a broad spectrum of potential offenses and presents significant risk to companies and investors, that it's everything from doing what you're not supposed to do based on the regulatory environment and clear laws and standards, through to saying that you do something and doing the opposite, or not doing what you say. And we know that it's going to get more intense over time. We fully expect that the African markets are going to continue with, as Christina said, both homegrown efforts and learning from international precedent. We think it's in the best interest of investors and companies operating on the continent to take the necessary steps to understand what the risk is that you face and to put in place appropriate mechanisms to mitigate those, manage those, bearing in mind that it might require you to expand your risk aperture beyond what you've traditionally been considering as your sort of key operational risks. I hope that you've found this a valuable discussion. I know I have, and I'm sure that the next few years will be very interesting for ESG-related litigation.
If you would like to get in touch or find out more about Bowmans, please visit bowmanslaw.com.